As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max 1 offer per account.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Game 2, White Sox, Red Sox.
This one, a deep drive left field going back, and it is long gone. Luis Robert Jr. ties the game here in the 7th. Fly ball backing up in left field is Benintendi. He will play it off the monster, and that's how this one will end. It's the Red Sox walking it off here in the 10th, and the White Sox lose a heartbreaker in game 2 of this 4-game series.
This is the worst.
Chicago Cubs baseball is on the air.
It's time for game 2 of this 3-game series.
There's a drive to right, going back is Carroll. Carroll cannot get it. It's off the wall and bounces halfway to the infield. Racing around third is Ian Happ getting the green light. Tucker going for 3. He's got a triple.
And the 2-2 Suzuki
drilled in the air. Deep left center. It's got a chance. It's gone. Cubs lead by a score of 5-1.
Here comes the payoff to Michael Busch. Swinging a fly ball left center field and deep.
Back goes McCarthy. It's got a chance. Gone. Cubs go back to back.
Bouncing ball to second. This is going to do it.
Horner will throw him out. Ball game over. Cubs win.
It's time for Hit and Run with your host, Matt Spiegel.
Good Sunday morning to you. Sing along, everybody, with this part, sure. The low brass means it's time for your baseball show. It is Hit and Run on a Sunday morning. Hope everyone is doing well. It's a little bit nippy out there as compared to some recent days, but still, it is April, it is spring, it is baseball, and it is Hit and Run on a Sunday morning. Looking forward to hanging out and talking with you. Sure, the White Sox only have 4 wins and 16 losses. They're the second worst team in baseball in front of the Colorado Rockies. Last year was bad. This year also seems bad. But there are young players of interest. There are legit players of intrigue. Edgar Caro had a hit yesterday. Chase Meidroth, what do you have, 3 hits yesterday? I think he did. 4 hits between the two of those guys. Both position players of genuine interest, and Shane Smith was pretty good again. Shane Smith is the best story on that team to me. Number 1 pick in the Rule 5 draft and has been very, very good. And yesterday, in front of 200, supposedly, friends and family, kid from Danvers, Massachusetts. Today, Sean Burke goes for the White Sox, another Massachusetts kid. Mike Vassell in that bullpen. He pitched yesterday and he got the loss. But he's another kid from Massachusetts. Meidroth was in the system. Hell, Crochet was pitching against him. Oh, this Sox and Sox synergy was everywhere. and you heard the Luis Robert home run, and the White Sox lose. But anyway, we're going to talk to Shane Smith at some point today. This morning, happy Easter to you, and very much looking forward to talking to Shane Smith, who's a guy I've wanted to talk to since the spring. Since his debut in the spring, when he struck out Freeman, Ohtani, and Will Smith in one inning in spring training, he was like, oh, yeah, I heard this kid was decent, but that was really good. So we'll talk to him a little bit later on. We will absolutely talk plenty of red hot, first place, on fire, Chicago Cubs. I mean, my goodness. The offense is absurd. And we'll talk about it with Quinton Berry at 9:30. That's the third base coach. The base running has been terrific. And doing the research getting ready for Quinton Berry today, I was reminded of this, that 10 days into the season, 10 games into the season, they had already scored 6 runs after beating force outs to second base. Remember that? Remember that early run they had on that? And Jed Hoyer talked about something I look forward to asking Quinton about. Chalk talk sessions. Old school. Coaches standing up front with the board. Can't be a chalkboard. No way in hell it's a chalkboard. Dry erase? I bet not. It's probably some gigantic monitor with a digital pen or something like that. Hell, council probably just draws in the air like it's Minority Report and just moves stuff around from Lucite screen to Lucite screen. There's probably precogs soaking in water around the corner, precognitively predicting things that are going to happen in today's ball game. That's probably the way it's going. Salute to Philip K. Dick, one of the finest science fiction writers of our time. But anyway, I guess it was his time, not really our time. But anyway, looking forward to talking about Chalk Talk sessions and much more with Quinton Berry. Heard a story about him on a marquee broadcast in the spring I got to ask him about as well. So we're going to talk to Quinton Berry. My friend Doug Glanville is going to be on the show today. I love Doug. Doug is a really thoughtful, interesting, smart guy. And I want to see if he can broker peace between the players and the owners, and also between Hall and Oates, because they're apparently never going to play together again. And Daryl Hall said some nasty stuff about Doug's friend, John Oates. We got to get to the bottom of that. I think we'll lead with that. But looking forward to talking to Doug Glanville. We'll check in with our Bruce Levine along the way, probably around 11:45. Get a scene setter from the ballpark at the latest on what's going on those red hot first place, on fire, Chicago Cubs. Folks, if we can't enjoy that right now, anybody see the Bulls get drummed out of a one-game play-in situation? And then they fired the guy in the front office who people actually respected the most? What? Huh? I mean, it is draft week, so the Bears thing is awesome. And guess what? The Bears sopping off the Cubs vibes with a biscuit. Ben Johnson with a first pitch yesterday. And was that Caleb at the game yesterday? I think I saw a video of Caleb Williams leaving the suite level with a Pete Crow Armstrong bobblehead. And I believe it was from after the game or maybe late in the game. Didn't stay for the end of that one, huh, Caleb? Huh? Baseball games? It was a good game. But anyway, just check on that. I think the Bears are gravitating to Cubs games for the vibes. But my goodness, the red-hot Chicago Cubs. Let's discuss. As a reminder, as just a brief reminder, this is the most difficult month of the season for any team. Schedule-wise. And by the way, I'm told by a man who would know that Caleb Williams, yes, was there. A whole bunch of Bears were there just trying to feel the Cubs vibe, trying to hop on the train. Let's carry it. Should we carry like a great Cubs season right into a really good Bears season? Wouldn't that be fun?
Don't tempt me with a good time.
Don't we deserve that? Sean Sears is back, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, Sean.
What's up, Spees?
The associate producer is not here today. He had been asking about you. He'd been wondering about you, and he's got a bar mitzvah lesson. It's very important.
Okay. Well, I'm glad he's got his priorities straight. Yeah. We miss him here, but you know.
Everything will be okay.
That's okay.
We're all going to survive.
We'll see him soon. We'll see him soon.
We're going to throw open the phone lines right now if anybody wants to hop in, because we got an odd schedule. Quentin Berry going to join us at the bottom of this hour. But that Cubs offense, 312-644-6767, I want to know why you think it's working. I know why I think it's working, but I want to know why you think it's working. And boy, is it working. Ladies and gentlemen, when you look at this offense, you have to remind yourself, they played those two extra games at the beginning, okay? And so they have at least one more game than everybody in baseball under their belt. So when you look at the counting stats, it can be a tad slanted. Not straight up misleading, but a tad slanted. Like, they're first in walks, they're first in triples, they're first in doubles, they're first in hits, they're first in RBIs and runs scored. They are first in a lot of things. They're also first in at-bats by more than 50. They've had 50 more at-bats than anybody else because of those additional games and because they've scored a lot of runs. They're first in run differential, as you know, by a wide, wide margin, plus 42. They've got 15 more in run differential than anybody else in their league. Oh, no, sorry. The Padres are at plus 34. So it's Padres are second, and the Giants at plus 31 are third. The Giants! And then the Dodgers, and then the D-backs. We got to talk about the NL West at some point. But this Cubs offense, absolutely on fire. I gave you all the things that they're first in. 21 more runs than the Yankees, 20 more hits than the Cardinals, who are playing some good offensive ball. More doubles, tied with the Mets for the most doubles, third in home runs, number two in stolen bases. But let's look at the rate stats, shall we? Let's look at the percentage stats to see how they compare. Third in batting average, behind only the Padres and Tampa Bay. First in on-base percentage with the Diamondbacks. First in slugging percentage. And then there's on-base plus slugging. And if you're first in both of those, you're probably first in OPS. That is the rate at which you get on base combined with the rate with which you hit for power. Number one in baseball. They're fifth in walk rate as an offense. They walk among the very best teams in baseball. They are sixth best in strikeout rate. They're only striking out that much. They're third best in contact rate, meaning how many times they swing and make contact with the baseball. Third best among all teams in contact rate. They're seventh best in line drive percentage. They're 29th in ground ball rate. That's beautiful. That is freaking beautiful. Folks, there are 30 teams. They're 29th in ground ball rate. They don't hit the ball on the ground very often. And this is what Craig Counsell wants. You know, there are some things that Counsell's really, really strong at and really clear about. And overall, it is the right thing to do. These days in baseball, with the way everything works, you want to hit the ball in the air, and you want to hit it into the outfield towards the fence. There is more slugging percentage in the air than there is on the ground. You must slug to win in this game. I love line drives, which is why I looked up line drive rate first. I love contact, which is why I looked that up first. But man, ground ball rate is a killer. And they're 29th. So, look, the offense is real. Why is it happening? That's my question to you. Sean Sears and I share a Google Doc, the hit and run doc, and we move stuff around into segments that we want to hear. In segment one there, Sean, you'll see I want to hear Ben Brown, who was terrific yesterday, talking about this offense for the Chicago
Cubs. I believe we were the best lineup in the National League. Our guys are just, and just before I start on that, our guys have just been doing an incredible job. I do truly believe we have one of the most in top to bottom, just thorough, great offenses in baseball. And kudos to them for putting up runs, especially off of my first inning. And just makes things a little bit easier out there when constantly you're in every game.
Ben Brown saying they are the best lineup in the National League. Here is Cliff Floyd on Marquee after the game talking about the middle of the order.
I wrote down the middle of the order was they dominated Zach Allen. Four hits, six ribbies, two bombs, Tucker, Suzuki, Bush. You can throw in Dansby, got a couple of knocks there. He's pulling a double. So this is what you want from the middle of the order. We talked about 7, 8, 9, how they held down the fort as well. But when you look at, you know, just keeping the pressure on that pitcher consistently from the start of the game, it does something to the mindset of that pitcher warming up to get ready for a game. I promise you, it just puts him in a position where he has to be perfect. And they're making mistakes after mistakes. And the one big thing, the Cubs are missing their pitches. That's bottom line what it's been. It's been fun to watch. We're talking about no chase, but how about hitting the pitch that you should hit? How about connecting and not fouling them off or missing them or striking out? Like, today was a prime example of how good this team is, you know, and they literally hitting on all cylinders right now, without offensively.
That's Cliff Floyd, who knows, and he knows a lot. He knows, obviously, based on the research and the chase and some of the numbers, but that stuff that he talked about there in the middle about the pitcher trying to be perfect, and he says, I promise you, it makes an impact. I know that it does. You know that it does. Smart baseball people know that it does. And that's why we can't be slaves to the numbers alone. And that's why the predominant thing that is making this offense this good is Kyle Tucker. It just is. Because everything else can get going a little bit more, and you can talk about the length of the lineup, and that matters a great deal. But one guy does lengthen the lineup when he's that good, but one guy as good as Tucker puts fear and a need for focus into the opposition that can mess them up. And then when other people are going along with it, then it just compounds and it compounds, and pitchers lose their mojo. Really good pitchers try to be too perfect. And what does this game come down to? A hitter and a pitcher, and the hitter trying to win every pitch. The pitcher trying to pitch with conviction and pitch with confidence. And they're going to succeed more often than not. So anything you can do to throw them off their game, and that is have a good long lineup with good at-bats, a lot of production from the bottom, but my God, the fear and respect of a superstar in that lineup changes everything. Changes things for the opposition, and at its best, it can change things for the guys involved. Seiya Suzuki has learned things from Kyle Tucker, people. He has. He has learned things. And he talked about it directly. Craig Counsell answered on it a couple of weeks ago. Aggressiveness, ambushing. Don't just wait. Seiya's got such a good eye, and he makes really good swing decisions. And for a couple of years, umpires were not helping him out, and it angered him. And he got stubborn at trying to win the war with the umpires and get the respect that he had in Japan, get the respect that he thinks he needs to control the strike zone. It's the big leagues, man. Things are a little bit different. Go up there looking for something you can damage and then damage it. And that's what Seiya Suzuki has been doing. Here's Seiya talking about Michael Tucker through his interpreter.
Yeah, I would say the whole thing, you know, I enjoy watching really good hitters hit, and there's so much you can gain from it. So, you know, watching him, you know, I'm trying to take in as much as I can.
So, yeah, he's taking that aggression. Tucker goes up there with a plan, man. He goes up there saying, all right, I know what this guy throws. I'm going to look for this. Here I go. And I'm going to get it. I'm going to drive it. Michael Bush has been talking about that. Good article at MLB.com. Our friend Jordan Bastion going deep on Michael Bush's development. That's a huge factor. Michael Bush now hitting .316 on the season, an OBP of .381, OPS just under one. So now you've got that guy taking a step forward. You got Suzuki following Tucker and delivering swings with authority. You've got some good things going on at the bottom of the lineup, of course. Texter says, Spiegs, a week ago you really were criticizing PCA. Has your opinion changed after his hitting performance this week? I was talking about my concerns with him as a big league offensive player. And he's had a very, very good week. Absolutely. I will accept that call out. There's no doubts about his base running. There's no doubts about his defense. There's no doubts about his speed. And his ability to slug is true. But man, he had looked awful and been really, really, really frustrated. I'm telling you, and my theory on PCA, I shared it during the week. I think his whole season changed with that weekend series in LA. His parents there, his friends in the outfield. Pete is an emotional dude. The emotions are close to the surface. Something in him relaxed there in LA, and he was out in front of heat. He was out in front of stuff that had been flummoxing him all season long. And he seemed to be very confident. And maybe this whole week, maybe it is taking the bunt out of his mind, the defensiveness of the bunt. Because maybe he can't function with that in his mind, toggling back and forth between the bunt and the slap and the slug. If he just needs to go up there and think like a slugger, then maybe that's what he needs to do. I think the batting average may take a hit in the long term, but if some of the slug is there, obviously, you know, you'll accept that. But he's not going to be a top of the order weapon as a speed demon with this style. But slug will get you paid as well. And slug is huge. So look, Pete had a great week. Absolutely. But the reason this offense is rolling to me predominantly is Kyle Tucker. Let's talk about it. This is Max in Lincoln Park on 670 The Score. Max, you're on Hit and Run. Good morning.
Thanks, Steve. Perfect lead in to where I'm going. And you've been talking for a couple of years about needing a force multiplier in the lineup. And that's what he looks like he is to me. I mean, he looks like he makes everybody else in the lineup just a little bit more comfortable. It's something that I think you've said over the years and various different hosts kind of give you crap about, like, oh, just guys are up there hitting. It's 1 through 9. You got 9 guys in the lineup. But it's an undescribable feeling the way everyone around Tucker looks better. And he's that player that I think we were getting.
Yeah, you know, a lot of them do look better. The manager feels better. It's just, we have seen it with really good teams. And sometimes it gets, like, put right in your face, like it did last year in the postseason when Juan Soto and Aaron Judge and Pete Alonso and Shohei Ohtani, like, when, like, superstars had big moments, you know? It sometimes it gets very, very obvious. And then sometimes you have the good fortune to watch a big pile of games with a really, really good player in the lineup. And you get to see it incrementally. You get to see it on the daily. In some ways, it reminds me of when we got to watch Zobrist every day and we were like, oh, that's how wins above replacement gets accrued. I get it. It makes sense now. But, you know, when you see the effect of the superstar in the lineup, it can be transformative. And the fact that he's left-handed matters. It because lefty sluggers, left-handed slug with the proliferation of righties, but also the fact that he can hit lefties. And it's just there's an extra bit of fear in the hearts and minds of opposing pitching staffs and managers and pitching coaches and catchers as they approach this Cubs lineup and as they do their research. It absolutely matters. This is Paul in Valpo on 670 The Score. What do you say, Paul?
Hey, good morning, Matt. Yeah, you know what? I totally agree with the last caller and obviously you as well. With Tucker really making the huge difference. And I agree with you 100% on PCA. He's either going to have to learn how to bunt or walk a little bit more to use, you know, take full advantage of his speed. But I really think the difference, besides obviously the huge difference in Tucker, is Michael Bush. You go back to another left-handed bat who looks like he's taking that next step. If he can continue to hit like this, it just could talk about lengthening the lineup. But it's not only lengthening the lineup, but it's adding some power and is he actually going more the other way this year? I don't know what the actual, you know, stats say as far as exit velo and things like that, but he seems to really be in a good groove. If he can continue that, it really makes that lineup really dangerous.
Yeah, I'm going to Michael Bush's Baseball Savant page, and let's see how much red there is and how much blue. Oh, boy, there's a lot of red. He's squaring up the ball a lot. He's not chasing that much. He certainly is. He's high in expected slugging, which means he's hitting the ball hard and far, whether it is an out or not. Think about that grand slam that got pulled away. What do his numbers look like without Andy Páez taking away that grand slam out there in L.A.? And I'll have to look at some of the spray charts and see. That opposite field home run yesterday is one example, and it's not the first opposite field home run and the opposite field driven ball that we've seen. And what's interesting is that this dude is right there in the middle of the lineup. I mean, hitting four almost all the time. And I have been on board with the way that Justin Turner and Michael Bush have been toggled here from the get-go, because I have a lot of respect of what kind of hitter Justin Turner has always been. But now that you're seeing what Michael has done, if Michael Bush has taken this next step, the question is going to be posed to Craig Counsell, I'm sure. Has that balance shifted a little bit? And we'll see. We'll see if Michael Bush is allowed to stay in against some lefties along the way. If Justin Turner pinch hits for other people in the lineup instead of Bush. So we'll check it out. This is Ben in Queens on 670 The Score. Good morning, Ben. What's happening?
Oh, good morning. I see you've stolen my Michael Bush thunder, so I'll just have to move on to my next topic. But listen, hey, first of all, great to talk to Sean Sears. Love. I liked Robbie, but I really love Sean. So we had a moment there, you know. So listen, okay, great. You took my Michael Bush. You took my Seiya Suzuki thoughts. But it's like this, Speaks. You know, we've been talking for a few years, and I've been insisting that Jed Hoyer has been putting together a damn good team. He has put together a good team. It was just missing that piece, that one piece that you just put it, you know, like the crown of the jewel in the crown. You just place it in there and then it's complete. That's what Kyle Tucker has done to this lineup, because everybody in the lineup has become more focused. Now, I will say this, you know, the top of the lineup, yeah, it's great. But look, in everywhere around the league, you look at the A's, their first four batters are pretty damn good too. But it's the bottom of the lineup that are making the Cubs go like crazy. It's PCA, it's Nico Horner, and it's the catchers who, this can't last forever, can it?
Oh, the catchers? The catchers having a combined OPS of like 1.4? No, I don't think it can last forever. But my God, Carson Kelly has more home runs than strikeouts. No, it can't last forever. But boy, it's awfully nice to have the best offense from the catcher position in Major League Baseball, almost always in the nine spot. So yeah, that's a big, big deal. We'll talk about the bottom of the order a little bit more as we go along. We'll talk about Jed's team that he has built. We'll talk about some of the issues, including third base and third base defense and bullpen. We'll talk about all that stuff as we move along. Top of the next hour, we're going to talk about front offices around baseball, a fascinating survey that came out that I want to share with you about other front offices and what they do well and compare it to Cubs and White Sox. We'll talk about that at the top of the hour. When we come back, Quinton Berry, the third base coach for the Chicago Cubs, joins us on Hit and Run.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
And it's Berry leading it off. He pops up a bunt. He's going to get by Kotchman and get by the second baseman Kipnis. It'll go to the grass. Berry is on his way to second, and he's in there standing up.
Interference also was called by Gary Darling, so even if they would have thrown him out at second base, I believe Berry still would have been given that bag. It's a nice idea. It's a bunt. It's not the greatest bunt, but it works.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
I will not stand for criticism of that bunt from Quinton Berry in 2012. First of all, it's his first major league hit. Second of all, it's a double. Come on, man. I mean, I guess it popped up in the air, but we can ask Quentin himself. He joins us right now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Cubs third base coach Quentin Berry is on the show with me, Matt Spiegel. Good morning, sir. I thought the bunt was successful at the very least.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Matt. I appreciate it. Yeah, it was some things happen, and some things happen in your favor, and it worked out, so I'll take it. Yeah, I'll take whatever I can get.
You take that. I love that your aggressive base running is highlighted in your first big league hit, because that's what you're known for. A lot of our listeners have known your name for a long time as like, oh, look at that. What a great ad for the September roster or for the playoff roster, right? But really, Quentin, it's how this team is playing. Like this, the base running and aggressiveness of this team, as a guy who was known for that, you got to love the way that this Cubs team is doing it right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's who we are. That's the way this team is built. We got so much athleticism. We got so much experience. Something that Council's been, you know, making a very big point of since day one of me getting here, embracing Wrigley, and just a bunch of different ways we can try to beat teams. So I'm loving that we're taking it all in, and we're trying to use every piece of it to help give us an edge, and it's working out really well right now for us.
Can you tell us, like, how was this template set of how you want to play? Like, was it something you presented to the players at the beginning of the spring, and who said it? How did it go?
No, I think it's something like I said, to his point of who we are. He talked about us being athletic, experienced, you know, and instinctual. And we have a lot of guys that can do a lot of different things, you know, not only just on defense and with the bats, but on the base paths. And you know, we went over the things that we did not so well last year and how we can improve, and paying attention to detail and how it can help us when the wind's blowing in and we need to get a run some way, somehow, and we can do it with our legs, not always with the bat. So the guys embraced it. We did a lot of work this spring training. We're doing a lot still right now with video sessions and things like that, and keeping the conversation going on how we can be great on the base paths and help us win. So it's good.
Jed Hoyer referenced chalk talk sessions. Mm-hmm. And there's no way it's a real chalkboard, though, right? Are we looking at dry erase?
No. No, we've moved up. We've moved up to, you know, we've got iPads and stuff like that and HDMI cords. So we're able to put something on there that these guys like seeing, and they're visuals. These, you know, Major League ball players are amazing athletes. They can make adjustments so fast. They just need to see it. And Jose Javier and Matt Tallarico also being added to the organization have done some great things with, you know, getting these visuals out there, getting these video sessions going. So it's worked out really well, and the guys seem to like it a lot.
What are some tricks of efficient base running? Give us something that you can that maybe a young player out there listening can immediately do better on the base path.
You just got to be paying attention, anticipating an opportunity to get that extra 90 feet. I think a lot of people just get on base. They're thinking about when they hit. They're thinking about what they're going through. They're thinking about everything other than what's happening on the field, paying attention to being a ball player. And that's the biggest piece, is be a ball player. Not only when you're on the field, but when you're watching the game, see those opportunities happen. If you're looking for them and you're paying attention, you know who's out there in the outfield throwing. You know what the counts are. We know what the stadium is like. If you're paying attention to those things, it comes a lot easier. And we always talk about slow the game down. And a lot of times what happens is guys just see something and catches them off guard because you're not paying attention to anything. You're just kind of going with whatever's happening in your mind somewhere else. So just being engaged in the game and what's happening is the biggest piece.
Man, I wonder if some of that is because, like, guys are so focused on hitting and constantly thinking hitting. Then they get on base and they're like, I did it. But no, your work's just beginning in some ways.
Yeah. No doubt. And then we talk about being selfless, man, like doing that. To be a good base runner, you're being a good teammate. That means you're locked in, you're engaged. You've seen us, our team, we've had some guys, we've had, you know, Seiya, we've had Pete, you know, beat out some force plays at second base. That doesn't go on your baseball card. You know, that's not something that you're going to get, you know, all this credit for, but your teammates see it. And, you know, you got guys like Justin Turner and old veterans and Dansby, and guys watch that. They see that. So they see guys doing that. Like, we have to do it. I have to do that. Like, we're all a part of it. So it just brings some team building and camaraderie there. And you know, you got to take advantage.
All right, let's take Pete out of it because he's ridiculous. Who's the best going first to third? Who do you feel most confident about? If you're at third, they're at first on a single, you know he's coming to you.
Dansby Swanson. Dansby Swanson's one of the best going first to third that I've seen. He has a really good feel for, you know, the way the ball's being hit and who's in the outfield. and the angles and being off angles. He'll challenge you there, and he's done a good job. He's done it over for a while, and I watched a lot of video on him. Dansby's really good.
Okay, how about Nico? You feel good about Nico's turn?
Yeah, I think Nico's just good all around. Like, he's just above average everywhere, anywhere. When it comes to stealing, when it comes to reading dirt balls, tagging, the guy just has a really good feel for the game.
Okay, who's the slowest but really tries hard and busts his ass doing the right thing?
I don't want to say slowest. It's not not so swift, but you know, Carson Kelly and Amaya have done a great job this spring training, really being good at second base, being engaged, and giving the opportunity to score. You know, Carson's done a great job getting in some lanes as far as like trying to get in the way of some throws, and I've been able to score Carson a few times where I didn't think I was going to be able to. So he's given me everything he's got every day.
That's awesome. How was it when you're standing in the third base coach's box and it looked like his triple was going to happen? How exciting was that to end the cycle, man?
Yeah, I'm not even going to sit here and lie and tell any stories. I had no idea. I had no idea that he was a triple. He kind of gave me a look when he got to third, and I kind of knew that was a different kind of look. I said, "What just happened?" And he just stared at me. He was like, "Yes." And I was like, "Did you just do that? Did you just do that?" And he goes, "Yes, I did." I said, "Oh my God!" I said, "I could have stopped the man in front of you. I didn't even know. I would have had no idea."
Oh.
I forget who it was. I was running in front of him. I almost stopped him. That could have been bad, but yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah, because it was a laugher at the time. Can you imagine if you held the man up from his suck? You'd never live that down.
And no doubt. That would have been all my fault. I had no idea. So that's probably my fault. Got to stay locked in.
Oh, man. I remember kind of like watching Chris Bryant. His turns were always so good. Like, do you counsel people specifically on their turns and how to just make them? Because there's a way to not lose speed when you're making turns on bases, right?
Right. We've talked about that. We put the cones out in spring training and talk about the importance of being efficient with the way you run and where we're at. The angles with two outs at second base, making sure we have depth there so that when we get around third, you're not running into me. You should be almost in a straight line. So we definitely do that stuff because it is important. You talk about bang-bang plays, especially with some of these guys that can throw. Like, we just got done playing against the Padres, who everybody in the outfield. You got Hayward in center. You got Tatis in right. Like, I need every piece of you to be in the right spot so we can get these runs if we need them. So just the attention to detail and just taking everything in and being serious about what you're doing on the baseball field.
Talking to Quentin Berry on Hit and Run here. It's your first year ever as a third base coach?
Yeah, I did a little bit of like instructs and doing all that. It's been an adjustment for me, but I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it.
That's awesome. So with that comes a little bit more scouting of the outfield arms, or were you doing it already anyway?
No, that's the easy part. I think I've always done that. I've always been in the guys' ears and always scouted everybody's, because when we want to go first or third, you know, letting the guys know at first who has good arms, who we can go on off angles and stuff like that. But I think the biggest part is just, you know, learning the relationship with counsel for that and constantly communicating with him and getting it to the players. And then, you know, my verbiage to the guys at third base, making sure it's not too complicated for these guys and they understand what we're trying to accomplish. So I'm just getting that under me, but everything else is coming pretty smooth, and it's just going to be a process for me, a learning curve.
All right, so that's interesting. So, like, stuff like on contact plays or whatever, when you got a base runner at third, when to be aggressive, when to move, that kind of stuff?
Well, what we're doing, what we're tagging on, you know, what we're trying to, you know, being careful of back picks and all that stuff. And, like, the biggest part when you're on the base paths with these guys, you don't want to give them too much information where they get locked up. You want them to feel free. You want them to feel confident. So, you know, the verbiage you use and the amount of information you give guys is very important, because you kind of take the instincts out of the guy if you give him too much. So just trying to work through those things and always being right there with counsel to make sure that I don't miss anything, because he's going to let me know if I do.
Have things changed with giving signs, even like since you were a player? Like, is it the same systems, like manager tells third base coach who tells base runners, or have they cut out middlemen a little bit?
No, yeah, I think it's pretty much the same. I think, you know, the council does a great job giving us some freedom there, me and Jose Javier over there at first. And that's part of the process too, right? Him and I getting a good, really good relationship going where we understand each other and what we can accomplish, especially if we have an opportunity to steal bases or if we're trying to, you know, like let guys hit. So like building that relationship where him and I, you know, is going to be very important. But yeah, he gives us some freedom there, but it's still the same system as it's always been.
I was watching, I think it was in the spring when you were on the mic with my buddy Boog over there on Marquee, and this story came out. You played for Craig Counsell for 1 year, a month? How memorable was that for him that time?
Yeah, he didn't remember it at all. Yeah, we talked about that. It kind of broke my heart a little bit. You know, he thought we played together. he said so. It was something that definitely let me know where I stood on his list of players that he had under his helm.
I mean, you're the manager of the Brewers. You're making a playoff 2017, right?
Yeah.
You're making a playoff run. The front office delivers you the Quentin Berry for all your base running needs, and he doesn't even remember. That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a lot going on, man. He had a lot going on. I understand it. I get what he's got, what he has to deal with. So I wasn't too mad. I just, it's crazy. It's crazy, but it's good. I let him know. I let him know every day.
Good. Yeah. You should. What do? You wave to him on your way in?
Yeah.
And Craig?
I'm your third base coach, guys. Don't forget. So, that's pretty good.
Hey, man, your personality, obviously, you know, and I've heard this, but like, you're a guy with energy, guy with optimism, and helping to, you know, to build people up a little bit. Does that fit third base coach? Does that fit the role right now?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's just one of my things. I know how hard this game is. I know this journey every year. I know the ups and downs, the lulls and stuff like that. I just try to keep it loose, man, and keep these guys, you know, having fun, understanding it's a game, and trying to get them to be the best players that they could possibly be on the field. So that's my thing. I know as a base coach and stuff like that, some stuff can be seen as like, you know, don't do that, don't do this. But if I got anything that I can give these guys, any bits and pieces of my energy that helps them, I'm going to do it. So I love what I do. I love being around the guys. And I'm just enjoying it.
I always think of a MLB coaching staff, Quentin, as like kind of like the Magnificent Seven, or I guess to update it, maybe Ocean's 11. Like, you need a mix of personalities, a mix of people, that kind of thing. So who's the bad cop? Who's the bad cop on staff?
Flash. Flaherty. Flaherty likes being the bad cop. He loves it. So it's good. He's great at what he does. He can get these guys going a little bit. So
see,
you gotta have it.
You gotta have it. You gotta have it. Because everybody gets motivated by different things. Ball players, some people need a steady hand, a firm hand. Some people need grace. Right? You gotta get to know these guys, I assume.
Yeah, no doubt. He does a good job of keeping these guys in check and calling out what they need to hear. And you know, sometimes at this level too, you're afraid. You're always afraid of, you know, pissing somebody off, but at the end of the day, they got to know we're trying to make them better. So you got to be able to put that stern hand down when you need to, and he does a good job of it.
How many managers did you have in baseball? I mean, I don't know if you've ever done the math. 14 organizations in 14 years?
Yeah.
Is that right? That's crazy.
14 orgs, five different big league managers. I played for Madden here. Played for Counts. So I played for Leland. I had the luxury of playing for some really good ones and learning a lot from these guys. So I'm very fortunate, very blessed for what I got to do in my career.
Outstanding. All right, last thing. Who had the best pickoff move of anyone you ever tried to steal off, Quentin?
That's a tough question. I don't know. I think Cole Hamels could read. You know, there's not very many guys that could read. You know, Pettit, those guys that could read as lefties made it very difficult, you know, where – I've probably seen about six or seven lefties that could actually read in my entire – most of those guys are pretty set in what they're doing. So if you pick the right pitch, you're going to be safe 100%. But those guys were tough. You couldn't really do anything on them. So as a lefty, that'd probably be the guys. Cole and Pettit were the guys that were tough.
So that's interesting. Read what you were doing. Know your tendencies.
If you take off, they're going to – yeah, they could be pitching home. They could be having a set pitch. And if you take off on them when their leg comes up, they can make the adjustment and pick you off. And there's not many guys that can do that. So that's pretty impressive.
Do you ever steal it against Mark Burley, or was he gone by the time you got up?
No, he was gone. No, I don't think he was gone. They just didn't let me play.
Well, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
You got those guys lefties, man. You got those guys. You got Sale. Well, yeah, I got those days off. Yeah, I was not in the lineup.
No, so. I understand. What was there a pitcher that you loved to see that you were like, oh, I can hit this guy? Did you have one of those?
I'll say it because he's a good friend of mine, Justin Masterson. I love facing Justin Masterson.
And
so his. Yeah, he was tough on righties, but easier for lefties. I love to say that. He's my friend, so I can say that.
That's outstanding. Quentin, thanks, man. This was really fun. I'll say hello next time at the ballpark.
All right, Matt. I appreciate you having me on. Thanks again.
You got it. That's Quentin Berry, Cubs third base coach, here on 670 The Score. I like that dude. He hasn't had any tough calls yet, right? I don't think there's been anything. There hasn't been any moment. Like, he's in a little bit of a honeymoon period. I got to be honest. As a third base coach, there's usually something that comes and all of a sudden you're waving Wendell. Or, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you're Willie Harris and you screw one up and you got to, like, talk to the media after and point the thumb. Like, it hasn't been anything like that for Quentin. But I like that dude. 670 The Score is where you are. We will take a break and regroup and come back and talk to you. And I can't wait for this topic at the top of the hour here on 670 The Score. When we come back, a guy is debuting this weekend in MLB who Quentin Berry would love. And I know I love him. I want to tell you about him when we come back on The Score.
The premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
The Tampa Rays have called up an absolute speed demon. His name is Chandler Simpson. He is the new Billy Hamilton, except he hit 355 last year in the minors. Chandler Simpson stole 94 bases in 2023, which led all of minor league baseball. Last year, he stole 104 bases, 30 more than any other player. And as I mentioned, he led the minor leagues with a 355 batting average. You may have seen Chandler Simpson earlier in the spring. He was one of the stories of spring training. And then while in the minors on April 4th, he beat out an infield single, a ball that went directly to the first baseman. He beat out an infield grounder to first for a hit. Dude is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And as soon as he got called up yesterday, I went to my fantasy league and I picked him up. And if you haven't done that, and you're in a league where people are not smart enough to be listening to Hit and Run at 9:55 on a Sunday morning, or they're not smart enough to be watching the waiver wire or noticing call-ups or breathlessly following people that matter on whatever social media, then you go to your league right now and you pick up Chandler Simpson. And you can thank me later when he might win your effing league. He might win your league. If that dude hits, look, here was always the thing with Billy Hamilton. And I had these conversations with Barry Rosner at the time when he and I would host Hit and Run. I'd say, Barry, what's an acceptable on-base percentage for a guy who's going to steal second and third? What's an acceptable on-base percentage for that person? And I still remember, I smiled at his reaction. I still remember him saying, oh, what a question. What a good question. I was like, all right, now I'm getting somewhere. Because it's not the answer as much as it is the question in baseball. Because the answer can shift, you know? The answer can be varied. The question is the thing. So I don't know. What is an acceptable on-base percentage? We can kick it around the rest of the day. My math nerds, my OPS people, my OBP people, but it's kind of slugging. Like, if I know a dude is going to steal second, then it's a double. You know what I mean? So I just need him to get on, which is all we need anyway. But for a guy like that, what does his OBP need for him to hit leadoff for me if he's going to steal second and probably third? We'll kick it around a little bit along the way. It is Hit and Run. Just got the official news. Shane Smith is going to join us at 11 o'clock. One of the best stories of the White Sox season will join us at 11. Doug Glanville has shifted, kindly, to noon. So it's going to be a great, great show. It already is. But let me tell you this. And I say it already is because the callers have been good and because the hangout is good and because Sean Sears is here, okay? Coming up next, let's talk front offices in baseball. You will want to know how some of the best front offices do their work. And I'll tell you which one I admire the most when we come back on The Score.